Welcome into the install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Greg, it is officially our offseason here in Nashville, Tennessee. Titans losing to the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know if you were as shocked. I know you don't get shocked by stuff. We are still shocked down here that that game went the way that it did.
Shocked? No. Yeah. I'm rarely shocked.
Sure.
No. Yeah. I mean, something would have to happen that is really outside the realm of what I see on tape on a regular basis for me to be shocked. And certainly that was not the case in that game.
Which is perfect, because I want to walk through, and I know the audience wants us to walk through the elements of how you've drawn that conclusion, because if they've been listening to the podcast all season long, we've talked about this. The way that they play offense is the way that they play offense.
Yeah, and so let me ask you, okay? I mean, you travel with the team every week, okay? Yep. You're do your job, travel. You're not sitting on a couch just watching on TV. Yep. So you travel with the team, which I assume means you have some conversations as well. So if I said to you, tell me about the Titans offense, tell me about the conceptual foundation, tell me about how they play offense, what would you say?
I would say volume running. I would say play action passing. I would say crossing routes, nothing really out breaking. Crossing routes, in breaking. I would say that is who the Tennessee Titans are, with the occasional deep shot.
So what was different about this game?
Not a thing, Greg. Not a thing. It looked like every Titans game I've seen basically for the past 3 years, even though the coordinators changed.
Right. So if we accept that as an established fact, which is true, by the way,
yep,
then are we speaking about a conceptual change in the offense to compete in a conference where you have Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, now Joe Burrow? And by the way, if you sack a quarterback 9 times and hold a team to, what was the final score, 19-16?
19-16, and he should have been sacked 11 times.
Right. So if you sack a quarterback 9 times and hold a high-powered offense to 19, you should win that game.
Yeah.
So in a conference that has Allen, Mahomes, and Burrow, how should you, and I'm giving my personal opinion based on watching tape since 1992, how should you structure your offense? We've spoken throughout the season, you know, they obviously lost Derrick Henry. And I'm sure there are some fans who think that if they didn't lose Henry and Henry had played all year, that Henry would have rushed for 180 yards and this would have been a normal Titans game. And we don't know the answer to that. That could well have been true.
Sure.
But the point is that that didn't happen in this game. Okay. And I find it mind-boggling that people thought that Deontay Foreman is better than Derrick Henry just because he had a long run in this game.
Oh, Greg.
But the point is that when you get to the playoffs, sometimes the run game gets stopped, no matter how good it is. So last year it got stopped in Baltimore.
Yep.
This year it got relatively stopped. I know Foreman had the long run. And putting aside Henry, whether he was 100% or not, I personally don't think he looked exactly like Derrick Henry, but sure, he did play. And that's the only way you can judge it. Then at that point, and you can talk to Coach Mack about this, when guys play, they have to play.
Yeah.
You know, you can't put guy out there and say, we lost because my best player really, you know, wasn't really ready to play, but I put him out there anyway. You know, that's not, you can't say that, you know. So the point is they couldn't run the ball. So then what happens?
You know, then you ask Ryan Tannehill to do more than he usually does, and it seemed to put them in a
bad
position.
And what have I said all year? And then you have to look at each interception. What have I said all year? I said that the pass game and the run game need to operate independently from one another because you never know when that's going to happen, okay? Look, they started the game with a pass play, okay?
Yep.
One can debate the concept behind the pass play. Look, the game opened with the Titans in what we call 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. The formation was closed to the boundary, meaning that the tight ends were attached to the formation to the short side of the field, and they had twins to the wide side of the field, okay?
Yep.
The Bengals matched up with a six-man front, and the linebacker, Pratt, was on the ball to make it a six-man front. And because of the front, they played a zone coverage, three under, three deep. The Titans ran a two-man route concept to the field, okay?
Yep.
There was no route to the backside, to the boundary side. So the safety, Bates, Jesse Bates, he had nothing to worry about on the other side. So all he did was react to Jones' route. There was nothing else for him to react to. So when I watched the tape, he took four steps before Tannehill even threw the ball. So it's easy to blame Tannehill, but there was nothing else for Bates to react to.
And that's a lot of what this week has been, at least here for us locally, Greg, trying to figure out, all right, how much do you look at Tannehill versus play design and what we know that they are all year long? Because Vrabel's explanation of that was that they were in max protect, so there was no route on the backside,
right,
which kept the safety from basically having to pay attention to the backside of the play. And you, as you said, just sat there and waited for it.
He just waited. So now, again, maybe they had studied Bates. They study him in more detail than I do, clearly. So I'm not going to say, you know, one way or the other, but maybe their film study indicated that he would drop back as a post safety and not sit low, but he sat low and just, he saw the routes to the field side. Who was the other receiver on the play? Was it Brown?
AJ, yeah. Julio was the target. AJ was the other receiver.
Right. So AJ kind of ran a wheel route, you know, or a sideline route. So he was irrelevant to Bates because Bates wasn't going to be playing him anyway. And then Julio kind of ran like a deep sit or a deep curl or an intermediate sit, intermediate curl, whatever, you know, terminology you want to use for that route.
Yeah.
It was the only thing for Bates to react to. There was nothing else that controlled Bates. You know, one of the things that we talk about a lot when with route combinations is you have to control safeties, okay? Because otherwise safeties just react to the routes and to the throw. So you need a route to control them, to prevent them from going to where you want to throw the ball. Because if you do nothing to prevent them from where you want to throw the ball, they just move to that. There's nothing that stops them from doing that. And that's what happened on that play. So, I mean, should Tannehill have thrown it? You could say, gee, he shouldn't have thrown it. But he really only had one place to look to throw it on that play. That was the design of the play.
Yeah. And that's been the most frustrating part of this conversation. Obviously, we're not in the meeting rooms, but we understand fundamentally what they've looked like all year long and why there are the possibilities for plays like this if you just study them as an offense.
Here's the classic way that games get talked about because you have access to the results.
Yes.
If by chance, and I know it didn't happen, but if by chance they won the game 19-16, what would be people saying? Classic Titans win. Man, they are physical. They are tough. They sacked him 9 times. Man, they did what it takes to win these tough games.
That's exactly what it would be because, Greg, that's exactly what Mike Vrabel said to us after the game. He goes, it felt like our kind of game.
Correct. So basically, that gets back to what your overall approach is. And like I said, in a conference that now has Mahomes, Allen, and Burrow is – And this is, I'm not answering my question. I'm posing the question. Okay. Is that the way you want to, do you want your offense to be run based with a good defense where every game theoretically could come down to the fourth quarter with a play or two deciding the game with a pass game that has limitations and that essentially works off the run game that doesn't really operate independently of the run game? Is that how you want to build your team? If the answer to that is yes, I'm okay with that. But these kinds of games happen.
Right. And that's obviously what they've committed to in the construction of this roster and how they've gone about playing these games offensively. Greg, I want to talk about the second interception on first and goal from the Cincinnati.
The Hilton interception?
The Hilton interception.
Yeah.
First and goal from the Cincinnati 9.
I'm sure everybody says, well, they should have run the ball because they had just run the ball 3 or 4 times to get there.
And that's exactly what I want to ask you.
Right.
About.
But, you know, I don't, you know what, Buck, I don't get into that. I don't get into play calling because play calling is always great when it works and it's not great when it doesn't work. So
sure.
I don't know how to respond to that. Obviously, they ran the ball on 4 consecutive plays to start the third quarter. After they fell behind 16-6, All four runs came out of base personnel, the last being Foreman's 45-yarder, okay?
Yep.
So then they line up. It was a wide receiver screen to this, you know, to Rodgers out of 11 personnel. You know, Hilton blitzed off the slot and tipped the pass. It was obviously a game changer to some degree.
Sure.
You know, so can you say, well, they should have run the ball? Sure you could. Are you wrong to say that? No. Are you wrong to say, you know, are they wrong to have called a quick screen? I guess because of the result, you can say they're wrong, but I don't know. And I'm being honest, but I don't know how to answer those kinds of questions.
No, and I guess I'm just looking for a better way to explain to people what happened there. And maybe we don't have a great explanation for it because this is, you know, Mike Vrabel calls us professional second guessers, and that's what I am, I not mean, what you are. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out the best possible answer for people to look at that and say, is there something that could have been done different? But of course, we have the results.
So then again, people don't think like this, but let's say they kept running the ball and all of a sudden the Bengals tightened up because they got into the red zone and they ran it three times and gained 5 yards and they kicked a field goal. Would people then say, well, you know, you can't just keep running it because they know you're going to run it.
You
can play that game forever. So that's why I never get into play calling, because first of all, I'm not in the meetings. Okay.
Sure.
I don't know how they have all this stuff mapped out. You know, maybe they knew something about the defense that, you know, maybe it was a great call. You know why? Because Hilton blitzed. So if Hilton doesn't touch the ball, you're losing a defender there. Maybe Rodgers, and I don't have the play in front of me, but maybe Rodgers could walk in for a touchdown. I don't know. Like I said, I watched it. We're doing this Wednesday afternoon. I watched that tape Monday morning, so I can't remember every specific of the play.
Sure.
But Hilton made a great play, but maybe they knew Hilton would blitz and they figured, you know what? All we have to do is beat that. And then there's one less defender to play side and we're in great shape. So, you know, there's all kinds of things that go into this stuff. But once people have the result of the play, then it becomes easy to say it's the wrong play if it doesn't work.
And I completely understand that perspective. I'm looking at this, Greg, and trying to figure out, you know, basically there'll be plenty of time that I'll have to talk about where they go from there. But your point, I think, overarching, if this is how you want to play football, do you believe this is the best way to compete with the Chiefs and the Bills and the Bengals now?
That's the question. And, you know, again, it's, I mean, do I think it is personally? No. That doesn't make me right. And it doesn't make Mike Vrabel wrong. You know, when he said that's our kind of game, I understand, as you do, as I'm sure most fans do, exactly what he means.
Yes.
He likes to play that physical, hard-nosed game. You know, he wants his team to be that way, and his team is that way. The only issue is, you often don't score enough points and you get stuck in these kinds of games.
Right.
And then of course the final interception, you know, that's another, I'm sure, big debate, because people are going to say, why are you basically doing a boundary read to Westbrook Ehene, you know, as your read? I mean, I guess you could say that, you know, and it's probably a reasonable question to ask. But you know, obviously, you know, what happened was it's Westbrook Ehene. So Eli Apple just sat there, never left his spot, and just drove on the throw. I mean, that's what happened. I mean, you know, the other thing you could say is, you know, because actually Tannehill had great protection. He threw with timing and precise ball placement. It's just that Apple sat on the route. He didn't move.
Yeah. No, that's basically what, going back and watching that game, it's just they could feel it coming every time, and they made the play when it needed to be made. Defensively, Greg, obviously they were great. They've done the same things that they've done all year long with the stunts and the games up front to get after this Bengals offensive line that has been poor all year long with the way that they kind of – with Joe, because some of those sacks were on Joe Burrow, not just on the offensive line.
No, without question.
And looking at that in those moments, again, not to get too much into the play call, but Greg, they kept ending up in these 3rd and 18 situations, and still it did not seem like there was adequate measures taken to try and protect Joe Burrow in real time. Maybe that's just what I felt from sitting in the press box and watching this game back. I wonder how you felt about this.
They got a bad O-line. I mean, that's the issue. Yeah. They have a bad O-line, and you know, that's just the way it is. So they have to decide, number one, I think they have to improve their O-line. We'll see what happens when they play this week. Who knows? They might get to the Super Bowl, but they've got a poor pass-protecting O-line. You know, I thought what was interesting with what the Bengals did is they came out with their first drive of the third quarter after playing every snap in the first half out of 11 personnel, meaning one back, one tight end, and three wide receivers. They came out on the first drive of the third quarter and lined up in 12 personnel with one back and two tight ends. And they had some success with Mixon. He had a 10-yard run, the 16-yard touchdown. He had a 13-yard run on the first play of the fourth quarter. They had their most success running out of 12 personnel. But as far as pass protecting, that's a bad O-line.
Yeah, it was difficult. I felt bad for Burrow back there, and he still was finding ways to make plays. Now, with this rematch between Kansas City and Cincinnati that was played in Cincinnati earlier in the season, Greg, this is obviously the AFC Championship game, will be played in Arrowhead now that the Titans are out of the picture. The explosive plays that Cincinnati was able to get, there looked to be, when I went back and watched some of it, you know, I mean, at any point, those playmakers are going to be able to make plays with the ball in their hands. But Kansas City seemed to have some coverage busts throughout the course of that game, and I wonder how that matchup is going to look the second time around.
Well, there were a couple of plays, I think, that looked like busts. I'm not sure that they were, but the way I'd speak about that is where they had a lot of success, and Burrow has done this all year to everybody. He's a very aggressive thrower of the football, is they had a lot of success working outside the numbers. Even when the Chiefs played some zone concepts, they would lock man-to-man on the outside, particularly when Chase was the boundary X, the single receiver to the short side of the field, and Charvarius Ward was the matchup. And Chase caught three one-on-ones. Higgins caught one. I think there were four one-on-ones to the outside, including one that was third and 27 in the fourth quarter. So, you know, the Chiefs do play a lot of man coverage. The Chiefs, two most played coverages this season have been cover one, which is man with a single high safety, and cover two, which is a zone concept. When you get to third down, their percentage of cover one, the man concept, increases significantly. So particularly if you're in the 2 to 6 yard to go area. So they're going to play man coverage to some degree. Now, maybe they'll play a little more of what we call two man, which helps your corners because you've got two deep safeties, not one deep safety. And that at least you get one of the safeties closer to the hash, you know, and potentially can deal with outside the numbers throws, because a single post safety is irrelevant on timing fades outside the numbers. He's not going to get there.
Greg, with Kansas City on offense against the Bills, I mean, other than being just a fantastic game to watch, unless you're a defensive person, I had Keith Bullock in the studio with me today, and he was disgusted by the way that defense was not played against.
Well, those quarterbacks are pretty good.
They are pretty good. But with Mahomes, Greg, I found it interesting that he didn't have a ton of passes traveling a ton of yards through the air. And I thought that was really interesting to watch, given that we associate, at least people who would look at that and not necessarily understand what they're seeing. I feel like people gave them credit for bigger air yards plays than Patrick Mahomes ended up actually having.
If I'm not mistaken, Buck, he did not have one pass that went more than 20 yards in the air from the line of scrimmage.
You're correct.
So that's the way they've kind of evolved to some degree. I mean, they might take a shot here and there in given games. Obviously, it didn't happen this week. But for the most part, Mahomes has evolved and matured into a much more of a timing rhythm passer who gets the ball out. And you know, obviously he had some really important scrambles and second reaction runs against the Bills, and he'll always do that. You know, when people talk about a guy like Mahomes and say, well, you want to keep him in the pocket, he's not going to stay in the pocket. It's just in his DNA. He's going to move at times, even when there's no reason to move. I think that's just the way he's built, the way he plays, and he has unbelievable vision when he starts to move, and we know he can make any throw. So that's just going to be part of his game. But he's played with a much better feel for the discipline, the subtleties, the nuance of dropping back, hitting the back foot, and getting the ball out. So in some ways, people forget. It seems like he's been in the league for 10 years. This is only, what, his fourth year as a full-time starter?
It's crazy.
I mean, he's improving and getting better. And, you know, that's what you want. And he's, you know, he's a high-level player, you know, as is Josh Allen. I mean, Josh Allen's improvement has been just remarkable. I mean, he is truly remarkable. And he's a 6'5", 240-pound man, which you kind of lose sight of.
I hated that somebody had to lose that game, Greg. I felt so bad for Josh Allen for throwing 9 touchdowns, no picks in 2 playoff games, and he's the guy that had to go home.
You know, and it's funny because, you know, I don't normally root Buck, you know, just because, yeah, I just don't, you know. I mean, obviously over the years I've interviewed a ton of players. I mean, there was one stretch probably until about 10 years ago where I was the only guy in the company that had interviewed both Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. That's since changed, obviously, with all the work we do here at Films, but you know, I just kind of became invested in the Bills in the fourth quarter. I just wanted them to win for no other reason than I wanted them to win. I mean, I can't give you a rational reason. And with 13 seconds to go, when they hit the touchdown, I just said to myself, you know, I just got a bad feeling.
Yeah.
A bad feeling.
Yeah, that game had gone that way all night long. It's got to be pretty incredible if it removes Greg Cosell from the rationale, rational, if just for a moment.
But you know, I thought that the Chiefs, they're not a running football team, but I thought they selectively ran effectively, and I'm curious to see if they do that in the AFC Championship game.
On the other side of the bracket, Greg, an NFC West rematch. We've seen these two teams play over and over and over again. The games are always great. The Rams survive a 4-turnover game against Tom Brady, which never happens. Right, but that defense was so, so special in that game again. And understanding that the Bucs were without some offensive linemen.
Without question. You know, and obviously the strength of that defense is that defensive line group when you have Floyd, Miller, Donald, and they do a lot of things with that group. They don't just line up in one place. It's a tough challenge. Although the one thing about the Niners and Garoppolo can be sacked because Garoppolo can get stuck in the pocket because he's purely a timing and rhythm thrower and he rarely leaves the pocket. So if he doesn't have that timing rhythm throw, sometimes he can get stuck in the pocket and then he becomes susceptible to sacks. But, you know, the Niners are not really a deep drop passing team. Donald this year did not have a sack against them. Miller did have one, but that was in the week 18 matchup when Trent Williams did not play. We're recording this Wednesday. I know Trent Williams did not practice today, but I can't imagine he's not going to go.
No one would be shocked.
Yeah, I'd be shocked. But the way in which the Niners play is not necessarily conducive to big sack numbers because they run the ball and they've done some really interesting, like I think you'll see a couple of interesting things in their run game because the Rams base defense plays with 5 across, just like the Bengals, you know, played with 5 across,
right?
A 5-2 front, essentially. That's what the Rams play in their base, a 5-2 front. So they widen the front. So sometimes the outside zone run game, just when you run it normally, is hard to get outside the edge because the edge is widened. So one thing we've seen the 49ers do this year is add a blocker to the outside zone element, and they bring that blocker in motion. It's often a wide receiver or a tight end in motion from the other side. So I think you'll see that. And the other thing I think you'll see them do is I think you'll see them run what we call gap scheme, where they pull and run a little more inside. The Bucs actually did that on the first 2 plays of the game this week. And on each play, they doubled Aaron Donald because of where he lined up. And they were able to get Fournette with, you know, an 11 and 10 yard run on those first 2 plays. And those are what we call gap scheme runs, where you pull the guard. They were counter runs. That is what the Bucs ran. So I think you'll see those 2 kinds of runs in this game.
I'm very much looking forward to it. I know if you're a fan of football, you've got to enjoy this. The stats, though, on Garoppolo, Greg, and I know stats don't tell the entire story, but 3-0 in the playoffs when he doesn't throw a touchdown and 9-2 overall in his career when he doesn't have a touchdown pass is just, I mean, it speaks to the creativity of their run game.
So, you know, Garoppolo takes more abuse on social media than you would think he couldn't line up and play in 9th grade. I guess my question would be, do you think Kyle Shanahan's a good coach?
Hell yes.
So wouldn't you have to assume that Garoppolo's playing because he's the best option at quarterback?
Oh, I'm not disputing that at all.
Not you personally, but I mean, people talk about, I mean, all year long, oh, how could you not play Trey Lance? How could you not play? And maybe Trey Lance in 3 years, we'll be talking about him being a great player. In fact, when I evaluated Trey Lance coming out, because he only played one game in his final year, and it was almost like a scrimmage type feel to that game, I said in my notes that in 3 years, we could be looking at a really good quarterback. Yeah. But I didn't think he was truly ready to play. And obviously, Kyle Shanahan feels the same way. I mean, you know, you can't – we know what Garoppolo is. There's not a mystery. No one is suggesting that Jimmy Garoppolo is Tom Brady. No one is suggesting that. But you know what? He was in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. He's now in his second NFC Championship game in 2 years. And to dismiss him flippantly like, oh, well, he has nothing to do with anything – they wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the Week 18 victory over the Rams, in which he was really good.
Yeah, no, I mean, we talked about that, that performance at great length. I just find interesting the way that they operate, because, I mean, to listen to John Lynch talk about it, and their clear and obvious need in the offseason to upgrade the quarterback position, I'm always curious why people criticize winning quarterbacks like Garoppolo the way that they do. If the style works for the staff and for the personnel, then why would you not play to your team's strengths?
Everybody develops narratives, okay? And that's just the way it works. So people try to put what happens into the narrative that's already formed.
Sure.
You know, obviously Aaron Rodgers lost this weekend. And now all you're reading about is, well, where's Aaron Rodgers want to play to really have his best chance to win a Super Bowl?
He's the next Titans quarterback, Greg, if you ask my Twitter mentions. He's the next Titans quarterback.
Why wasn't this year his best chance to win a Super Bowl? They had a playoff game at home against a team that didn't score an offensive touchdown, and Aaron Rodgers was really poor in that game. I watched the tape. He was bad. Okay, yeah. So why aren't people saying that? And by the way, I think Aaron Rodgers is the best thrower of the football I've ever seen. So this is no knock on Aaron Rodgers. He had a poor game. You know what? Sometimes that happens, but he had a poor game. So this wasn't a good chance for him to get to the Super Bowl this year. So now they have to figure out where a really good chance is, you know, because it's a narrative that's already written and people are trying to figure out how Rodgers now fits into their narrative that they've already determined.
That's why we love having you, Greg. Nuance. That's why we appreciate these conversations. With that being said, Greg, I mean, to end on a spectacular note with Cooper Kupp, I mean, he's been doing this stuff to people all year long. The way that they use him in their offense is so much fun to watch, and just his refinement at the wide receiver position. And I know he's not the only reason why that Rams offense.
No, I mean, they do a lot of really good things.
And but Kupp, goodness, you know, I can't get over their passing game.
Yeah, obviously Kupp is, you know, won the Triple Crown this year, and you know, but it's interesting. He's had a 100-yard game in each of the two games versus the Niners, and they lost both. So, which doesn't mean Cooper Kupp's not a great player. But, sure. You know, and they, like you said, they use him in multiple ways. But it's a really – Beckham's become kind of a really interesting part of this offense now. He's their boundary X for the most part. Jefferson's become their Z, their movement receiver, which Robert Woods was. And Kupp's kind of the slot for the most part, not always, but for the most part.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to watching both of these games, Greg. I always appreciate our conversation. When next we talk, there will be a Super Bowl contestants decided and we'll get into the matchup again.
Yeah, there will be. God. And then, and people will just overplay every detail, which is fun. That's what people do.
Greg, I got three. I'm doing 17 hours of live sports talk. If I don't have narratives, I don't got nothing. I got nothing. So
you can just make some stuff up, Buck.
Careful, Greg. You're getting too close to the bone. You're gonna explode. Greg, I appreciate it as always, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Buck.